time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
I think for the average person that sees me, they don't know that I'm a cat dad.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right. Happy, happy Wednesday. It's hump day already. Kind of hard to believe.
That is true.
We're rolling along. We are going to talk about the Astros. They won last night against the Guardians. A nice little bounce back win. Of course, we're going to touch on Texans OTAs and all of the other fun things happening in the sports world.
Yeah, like another Deshaun Watson.
More news, right? And we're going to talk about awkward interactions with athletes. So we do have what I think is a fun show ahead, but obviously we would be remiss and a little bit tone deaf if we did not talk about what is happening in the Lone Star State. My understanding is it's only about 3 or 4 hours away, which I think
Nevada
makes it
right.
A lot more real. Not that it's not real without that, but when we look at everything that's happened in this country with gun violence from Columbine to Sandy Hook, there's almost too many to even remember. And unfortunately, that number got higher yesterday. 19 children, 2 adults killed in Uvalde in a mass shooting. The gunman is dead, 18 years old. And whenever things like this happen, we gather details. It takes a while to gather the details. And that's what Lester Holt was talking about yesterday, is it does take a while to, first of all, find out who the poor victims are, notify their families. And then you can never make sense of it, but put the pieces together through the shooter's social media and whatnot of what happened. But a very, very heavy day in the Lone Star State, Paul.
Yeah, definitely. And it's almost 4 years to the day when the shooting that took place nearby here at the Santa Fe High School, it killed 10 and injured, I want to say 13. And you just realize this has been your whole life. Not that you're experiencing it yourself. You turn on the TV and there's a story about it. What are you supposed to say? What are you supposed to do? What even can be done? And of course, every single time we see one of these, it turns into some sort of political conversation mm-hmm. where people that we elect seem to use this as some sort of impetus to do X, Y, or Z. I guess all I can say is that when I hear Steve Kerr, the head coach of the Golden State Warriors, talk about it the way that he did before last night's game 4 between the Warriors and Mavericks, I mean, I feel just like he does.
When are we going to do something? I'm tired. I'm so tired of getting up here and offering condolences to the devastated families that are out there. I'm so tired of the, I'm tired of the moments of silence. Enough.
It's personal for Steve Kerr. His father was murdered in 1984 in Beirut by
a lot of people don't
shooter.
Know that. His,
right.
When people are like, why is he so passionate about this? It's the background is there.
Yeah. And I think anyone in that situation, regardless of political affiliation, would be pissed off every single time they see something like this. And I mean, who isn't? Kids just got killed for no reason. A couple of teachers were killed. And Kerr did go off on a tangent talking about the lack of action when it comes to voting on gun background laws before concluding his almost 3-minute opening press conference statement with more of the same.
We can't get numb to this. We can't sit here and just read about it and go, well, let's have a moment of silence. Yeah, go Dubs, you know. Come on, Mavs, let's go. That's what we're going to do. We're going to go play a basketball game.
For their part, the Houston Texans put out a statement about this. We are heartbroken by the afternoon's tragic events in Uvalde as we mourn alongside our neighbors in Texas to the victims, their families, and the entire Uvalde community. You are held close to our hearts today and in the weeks to come. The Dallas Cowboys, Vanessa, put out a statement as well.
Yeah, I hosted pregame and postgame for Astros last night, and they had a really touching moment of silence right before first pitch.
Right.
So this is what people should do. Hopefully there are going to be some organizations that step up financially to take care of the funerals. We usually do see that. We saw J.J. Watt.
Santa Fe.
You know, that took care of the funerals of the folks in Wisconsin, helped take care of the funerals of the folks in Wisconsin. So you do see some of the good in humanity when things like this happen. But it's just really devastating, and it does make you wonder. These are like the most innocent people in society. You're talking about children and then teachers who have the biggest hearts. So it's always sad when something like this happens to anybody, but you just cannot wrap your mind around somebody doing this to children. And we got a text on the text line, and this was actually during the show before us, but it said, I have daughters at an elementary school. We haven't done one thing about this people because these people, because of the money and lifestyle this country gives to them, allow this to happen by forgetting and voting. Okay. So regardless of what side of the aisle you're on, and you and I aren't here to make it political, Paul, I do agree with the fact that the people and the lawmakers during COVID, during these mass shootings, during all of these things are in their cushy houses.
They're cowards.
And their kids go to the same private schools and they all vacation together in Nantucket, and they're wealthy regardless of what happens to us.
Yep.
That's why I tend to not get too passionate about any political candidate, because they are all living the life with the best benefits, with the most money, again, regardless of the side of the aisle that you're on. And so the sad thing about it is it comes down to us to protect ourselves. It comes down to teachers to know active shooter drills, because the politicians, quite frankly, aren't going to do anything about it. I think that's a sad place that we're at in our country.
You're right. We're desensitized to it. It's sadly going to keep happening. And these people will just find something else to get voters worked up about to move on from the topic that's right in front of them. And it pisses me off so much that this is just the way that it is, you know? And I wish that there were a simple solution. I know some have suggested to Kerr, well, hey, I mean, have the solution. None of us are supposed to have it. None of us are supposed to see this happen as often as we do. And I really don't know what the solution is. I mean, okay, you could have advanced background checks or something like that. Fine, but people are still going to find ways to get guns. We could have better mental health resources for people. Okay, is that going to stop this too? That's the funny thing is like, yeah, okay, there are solutions supposedly, but I mean, shoot, it's been what, 30 years since Columbine almost?
Yeah.
And I mean, this is just something that you see so damn much, and it sucks. I was at the gym. I looked up at the TV. I saw it on every single one of the networks with their own different spin, their own different take on it. And it's just like, okay, well, sure, I'm going to see something like this again a week from now, 2 weeks from now. And I really do wish I had the solutions. I know a lot of people also feel the same way. But all I can think of is that the people that are supposed to be the ones making those tough decisions for us never do it because they're cowards. So here we are. It sucks. All I can say right now, and to try to just do the right thing and to be a kind person, you know, reach out, give what you can.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine what those parents are going through. I can't even imagine what those teachers who and students who survived are going through right now. It's just absolutely brutal. And our hearts go out to the folks in Uvalde. You know, it feels like this is an everyday thing.
So, you know, I had friends that were tweeting about this, and it is a very strange thing that where we're at, we walk into a concert or a public school or places like that, and we kind of have an exit strategy. Or we go into a school and we have to think, okay, well, what would happen?
It's nuts.
When we grew up, which was not that long ago, we were doing fire drills.
Yeah.
And now these kids know what to do if there's an active shooter. I don't know what the solution is. I'm not somebody that believes in black and white solutions, because I don't think it's ever as simple as, and I thought that with, that's... So it's not just as easy as a gun law or anything like that. But certainly when we look at mental health, when we look at where we're at as a country as a whole and what we put forth the resources to mental health and the way that we track people's activity, a lot of these people that do these shootings, it ends up there were a lot of signs there.
Yeah, and if you read up on this guy, I mean, there were definitely plenty of signs.
How do we monitor the signs? And how do we differentiate people like the guys in my family that are super safe with guns and store them properly and use them for hunting versus people? I don't think there's an easy solution, which is why you never see me acting like I know what the solution is. But it's really sad. And we would be remiss for sure if we didn't mention the devastation that's happening all across the country and in the Lone Star State. Matthew McConaughey, a native, actually, hometown guy in Uvalde, and even he has talked about this. So
everyone weighs in on it except for the people that have the power to do something about it is generally how it feels, because the people that do have the power to do something about it will turn it into something that it's not. You know, so you hear someone like Steve Kerr saying these things and you might get annoyed, or maybe Matthew McConaughey. And there have been times, too, where I have heard, you know, celebrities of the world weighing in on something. Specifically, it's usually global warming, with this idea of like, we got to do something, we got to do something. But in this situation right here, and especially with Steve Kerr's own dad having been murdered, I mean, I listen to him and I feel the exact same way as him. I'm just pissed off and I'm tired of constantly looking at stories like this and, yeah, feeling desensitized to them. I mean, you see the number on the screen and you're like, I've seen this before.
Yeah, we have all seen it before.
Jesus.
I do think it's important, and I put this on Twitter last night, where it's like, don't ever count me as somebody that's numb to this. I am not numb to this, even though we see this a lot, and sometimes, unfortunately, we can't even keep track of which shooting. I mean, we were talking about Santa Fe, and I was like, okay, was that the one that was in 2016? Oh, no, that was Orlando. That was Pulse. But then when was the one in Wisconsin versus...
I mean, God.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
You know, numb isn't even the word, as you said. It's just you're calloused to it, because it's just over and over and over and over and over again, and you wish that there were a solution to it. And just,
well, certainly having an open mind and an open heart, and hopefully things can change. Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, Deshaun Watson, he was the subject of an interview on Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel. We're going to break that down a little bit, listen to some audio, and talk about what we think could happen next with Watson.
But before we get to that, here's a great, awkward, not awkward at all transition. You want to distract yourself from how terrible the world is on Saturday night? Well, guess what? You got Gervonta Tank Davis trying to defend his WBA lightweight title against number one ranked contender Rolando Romero. Two undefeated fighters in a matchup for the ages, which is live on pay-per-view this Saturday at 8:00 Central, showtime.com to order now. Hey, Paul, what's going on in the fight? Well, listen, I mean, Gervonta Tank Davis is boxing's hottest young attraction. Rolando Romero is unbeaten. He's the number one ranked contender. So this is something that's going to be pretty fun to watch, you know? And you also have got on the undercard, you've got two division world champion, Iris Landy, the American Dream Lara. What a nickname. Defending his WBA middleweight title against hard-hitting Irish crowd pleaser. Look at these descriptions. Gary Spike O'Sullivan. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Check it out Saturday night on Showtime. Showtime.com is where you go. Again, Gervonta Tank Davis and Rolando Romero.
ESPN 97.5. You're back with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, we are rolling along on a Wednesday. We hope to talk about some positive things later in the show, but this is just how it rolls some days. Deshaun Watson in the news again. He continues to be. We're expecting that NFL investigation to be wrapped up soon. In fact, Roger Goodell said that yesterday at the owners' meetings in Atlanta, how long he'll be suspended and whatnot, we do not know, but we know that we'll know soon. Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel, a long-standing...
Real Sports.
You do that really well.
Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel.
Magazine program on HBO.
Not sanctimonious at all.
Soledad O'Brien interviewed Ashley Solis and a woman named Kayla, so two of the accusers against Deshaun Watson. These are two of the women that are part of the civil lawsuit, so they are represented by Tony Busby. I don't think we necessarily learned anything new last night. I do want to start by playing audio of Tony Busby and Ashley Solis, and then we have a couple of other pieces of audio we'll play, but I want to get to this topic first.
Sure.
I thought that they were serious, that they were going to, like, okay, you know, we're going to take these things seriously.
Tony Busby is the attorney for all 22 women suing Deshaun Watson. Busby says that he made a number of the women available for interviews with NFL investigators last spring until he began to believe that the league wasn't interested in what they had to say.
It wasn't a fact-finding situation. It wasn't that at all.
You don't think they were trying to find out the truth of what happened?
I think they were doing it because they were expected to.
I think that they had that interview with me or investigation with me for the sake of saying that they did something.
Yeah.
So this was, I do want to give NFL. HBO a shout out. I actually thought this was a very fair segment.
I did too.
I didn't feel like they attacked anybody. And the way that Soledad O'Brien just asked, why do you feel that way? What made you, you know, feel like it wasn't fair? That was Ashley Solis, by the way. So she's the first person that we had heard from who put a face with the name at that press conference with Rusty Harden.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought Real Sports did a good job of genuinely being fair. And
they
that,
asked follow-up questions
yeah,
to the
Yeah,
and
that
other
wasn't
person.
The first time we had heard these women say that they felt like the NFL's investigation was essentially BS.
They asked follow-up questions, and her name is eluding me right now, but to the other one of the alleged victims that was interviewed, they asked follow-up questions. Well, you were still texting with Deshaun Watson afterwards. Why? And she said that she was giving him the runaround. I do think, too, as it goes a little bit further, Rusty Harden's side of things was definitely presented, too, and how they claimed that, I guess, a lot of these were consensual acts and that some of these people were trying to secure relationships after the fact or go after money, which may have been true. Again, though, we're talking about 22 alleged victims, which is
it's
where...
It's a lot.
Right. I mean, it's difficult to get to the bottom of all of it. But to your point, yeah, I did think that they did a pretty good job, at least trying to present both sides of it, even though, you know, Deshaun Watson and Rusty Harden obviously didn't make themselves available for it in any way,
and I wish
shape,
they
form.
Would have. And I know why. I get why they didn't. PR control and whatnot. And I think in Rusty Harden's opinion and from his legal experience, he had kind of talked about and alluded to why he didn't make Deshaun available before, which is it can only hurt him, not help him. But at some point, I would like to see Deshaun Watson do an interview, but I don't know if he ever will.
No, he
I
won't. Think he he'll says
stick,
he will, but he won't.
He'll stick with doing the Zoom
He's
calls and talking about being legendary and whatnot.
God.
But you do wonder when you watch all of this, what the NFL's perception is going to be. Is it going to be one of those things to where, because I could easily see this, where they all think that he's disgusting. They all think that he did bad things. But they can't really prove anything.
Right, exactly. We've touched on that a couple of times. Before we dive a little bit further into the whether or not anything can be proven, which it does seem like it's an uphill battle just because of the way laws are when it comes to collecting evidence that's
right.
taken place in a massage room. You asked about the you wonder what the NFL's perception is going
sure.
to be. And you mean just of the entirety of this situation?
Well, there's an investigation that they have to do. And they are supposed to be, quote unquote, fair. So my question is, when they hear these things and these details and these nuances, like that one of these women did continue to text Deshaun Watson, or when they hear the detail that Ashley Solis cried, which Deshaun Watson said under oath, are they going to suspend him for a couple of games based on the fact that they think that he's gross and did something wrong? Or are they going to sit back and Lisa Friel, former chief sex crimes prosecutor, who's seen a lot of bad things in her time, say, okay, well, I think he's gross. I think he's kind of a pervert, but we don't have any grounds to stand on to prove he did anything.
Simplistically, if they're looking at conduct detrimental to the league, I mean,
it's a good point.
The league is embarrassed right now, so it should be as simple as going after it. But, and you heard it from Ashley Solis and to an extent from Busby, how far did the NFL really want to dig here?
It's Kyla Hayes, by the way. Excuse me.
Thank you.
Kayla earlier. It is Kyla.
How far do they really want to dig? How much do they really want to know? Do Do you ever really want to get to the very bottom of the rabbit hole and then find out some things that you can't unlearn, that you won't have plausible deniability for after the fact? The NFL doesn't want any of that. And it's funny to see this investigation compared with their investigation into Tom Brady for Deflategate. That, they were trying to get to the point where they could accuse and damn
Hell
Brady.
Yeah, brother, and they did.
And in this situation, it's different because I think that they don't want to actually know all of the specifics of it. If you watch the report on Real Sports, and it was about 15 to 20 minutes or so, towards the end, Bryant Gumbel comes in and says, in the 11th hour.
I love when you do this. Sean and I always laugh when you do yours.
Came back.
Not a funny subject, but the voice is funny.
They didn't want to weigh in on it at first, but afterwards, they decided to join in at the 11th hour. So this is one of the attorneys on Rusty Harden's legal team, and she had some interesting thoughts.
For Deshaun Watson to be innocent, 22 women would have to be lying. Why would the public believe one man versus 22 different women?
Well, I think there's two answers to that. First, it's 22 women. It's one lawyer. There's only one lawyer who was willing to take these cases. And as we know from Ashley Solis's deposition, Mr. Busby was not the first, probably not even the second or third lawyer that she went to. But he was the only one to take her case. Why? Not because it had merit, but because he would use these cases to increase his social media following and, quite frankly, to get on shows like this one. And when we start looking into how did we get to 22, I think that's a very valid question. And I would argue that the inquiry should be focused on Mr. Busby's conduct, not Deshaun's. Because when you start looking into how we got to 22 cases, he went on social media immediately to create vague statements, vague allegations about behavior that needed to be stopped, and then solicited clients to say, call me. And they did.
Deshaun Watson has insisted that in these massages that he was looking for nothing other than professional services. But we know he did have sex with three women, right? Oral sex with two, vaginal sex with another. So how do you explain unintentionally ending up having sex with people who are giving you professional massages?
Well, in every massage, I will tell you he did go intending just for a professional massage. And only those three instances where sexual conduct occurred, consensual sexual activity, it occurred after the massage session had ended. And Mr. Watson has testified and is insistent that that sexual activity was initiated by the plaintiff in every single instance.
He said he has no regrets. Is that still true? He has no regrets?
As he testified in his depositions last week, yes, he has no regrets because he did nothing wrong.
It's extremely bold for him to say that he has no regrets. And
that he's done nothing
and
wrong.
And not even say, you know what,
but
in hindsight, maybe I should have read the room better. But this is why Rusty Harden has won so many high-profile cases.
That's why lawyers get paid a ton of money. I mean, if you just take a look at the entirety
of it. That $1 million retainer has probably been spent.
I wouldn't be surprised by that. Look, I think, you know, you heard her. Clearly, she's an intelligent woman. And in this situation, hey, what do to defend your client? Well, you highlight things. Hey, there's no evidence. Hey, nothing happened. There's no way to prove that something happened there. All they can do is say, okay, well, we can take a look at the texts. But there's no video, there's no photos of what took place in these massage rooms because it's inadmissible in a court of law. So she knows that. She's smart. And I'll also say this. I mean, listen to the first part of that. I mean, to Tony Busby, peacock that he is. I mean, did you see the way that he was presenting himself actually on Real Sports? Here he is in this room with all sorts of art.
He was so professional.
Sharkskin suit, hair slicked back. I mean, look, I hate to, you know, label somebody based off of their appearance, but that is what Tony Busby is. He is a cartoon. And in this situation, he has, I think, gone about it in a way to, yes, of course, win favor for his clients, but in a way that I think a lot of lawyers would find disgusting because this is not the way that conduct is supposed to be done. You know, that's not as...
It's one of those classic, multiple things can be true, right?
Right, because, exactly. Yes.
Because Busby's clients could be telling the truth, but he has been a snake about it. He's been extremely attention-seeking.
Right.
And at times, he said things in the past that are controversial. So I think with the NFL investigation specifically, now the legal matters are one thing. We know two grand juries did not indict him. It could go to trial if he decides not to settle. But for the NFL investigation, I just think it's important to ask ourselves what the NFL's goal really is. I wish the NFL's goal was to find out what happened and punish him accordingly. I think it may be more of a PR move that they're doing an investigation.
Yeah, of course it is.
In the first place. And then again, is there proof, or is it just, are they looking for proof, or are they looking for, as you said, conduct detrimental to the league? I've always said, I hope that this isn't what they do. They could also punish him for having broken COVID protocols. I think it would be a bad look, but he did technically break COVID protocols.
This is the technicality we'll get him on. It's like Elliot right. Ness getting Al Capone for a tax fraud instead right. of, you know, murder and things like that. To wrap all of this up, I think that if the NFL is truly doing anything, what they will be doing is trying to find a way where, one, they look tough, and two, they don't look like they have allowed someone to get away with something. And that's why I do think that they're going to give Watson a lengthy suspension regardless of what actually took place. Because the contract the Browns gave him, the trade, the way that it went down, the way that the Browns actually looked into it, and all these things that are coming to light, and because of people like us that are consistently saying, like, look at this, look at that, look at this, they're going to have to come down hard on him. And if it's a suspension that's 8 games, honestly, I'll be surprised at this point.
You think it'll be more?
Yeah, I think so.
Wow.
It should be. It
fascinating.
Should be. If they're smart, I mean, if they don't... Now, look, we're all going to forget about this, much like, you know, in our conversation at the top of the show. We all forget about this like 2 years, 3 years later. That's just the way things work. But
Ashley Solis and Kyla Hayes saying that it felt like, quote, a screw you when he got that $230 million guaranteed. So we'll definitely keep everybody updated on this. One of the bigger stories, not only in Houston, but the entire NFL. Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, the Astros get a good win and the Texans are in OTAs. Hear from Brandon Cooks next.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
0-2 pitch hit high and deep to right field. All the way back, Mercado. This ball is gone. 3-run home run. First Minute Maid Park home run of the year for Tucker's, a 3-run bomb on an 0-2 pitch.
I could not believe that was Kyle Tucker's first home run at Minute Maid Park of the year, because he's been really good with home runs away, but it was his first home
That's
run.
That's surprising.
That was very surprising. Todd Callis and Jeff Bagwell on the call last night. It was a fun game. The Astros won 7-3, a much needed kind of comeback after they didn't win against the Guardians the day before.
And we found out you are not bad luck.
I am not. I am at 500 right now.
Pre and post again. Good job.
Thank you.
And this was one of those games where the Astros offense did what we know it's capable of, which is to completely ruin a game, kind of like Steph Curry with the Warriors, in just a matter of moments. And yeah, that was a messy, messy couple of innings for the Cleveland Guardians.
Regards.
You know, my problem is now not really with the name as much as the logo. Not a good logo.
No, it's weird. It's like a G with wings.
Yeah.
It should be a C with wings.
It's a good fantasy baseball logo, like for your fantasy baseball team, where it's like in the little corner. It's a good like rights-free logo, clip art kind of.
Nice. Okay, Sean. Yes, clip art.
There's a clip art.
Like in elementary school when we used to
get
do
what
the,
you're saying.
Yeah, the picks type thing.
I don't think it's even decent. The Photoshop logos I did for my fantasy football teams are significantly better than that. You know, like who can forget Soul Glow and King Douche? You know, like what a great team nickname that was.
Legendary.
Right. It was like Jay Cutler was one of, it was a 2-quarterback league, and I had Jay Cutler as one of my quarterbacks. And when Josh Freeman was going Jerry Curls with his hair, that was my quarterback. So, you know, that's what we had. In this situation right now, you have just a baseball team that, yeah, I hate the logo. You got to have the C in your logo, like G. Why is the first letter of your team nickname in the logo? That is stupid. Like, that is moronic. You're from Cleveland. The hat is a C. Why is your logo a G?
That's actually a really, really good point. And like, that's not just it's always sunny in Philadelphia rant. That's actually a really good
point. Stupid.
And now I'm going through my head, all the teams that have a letter as their logo, it's always like the Boston B. I guess New York, but it has New York in it.
Yeah.
And it, yeah, wow.
It makes
Chicago has the C.
The only Phillies, one that I can think of that did this, it's the Odessa. Check that. It's the Dillon Panthers of Friday Night Lights. So the fake version of the Odessa / Permian Panthers. You know, Mojo Magic, if you watch the Friday Night Lights movie or if you've read the Friday Night Lights book, it's about the Permian Panthers. That's the high school name. But in for whatever reason, Friday Night Lights, the TV show, they just ripped off the logo from Permian, and it's a P on the side of the helmets for Panthers, even though it's Dillon. That drove me crazy throughout the whole season.
Well, because they're doing it because the real team was Permian.
Right, but why not just have the school name start with a P?
Oh, yeah.
You know, why does it have to be Dillon, East Dillon or whatever? So anyway, yeah, that distracted me for a whole season. This is what happens when you're OCD. But anyway, right. The Astros won.
The Astros did win against the Cleveland Guardians. A multi-hit night for Jose Altuve
and
Jeremy Pena. Jeremy Pena had made that kind of silly mistake two nights ago, so it was nice to see him bounce back as well. Great night for Alex Bregman. And then Framber Valdez going seven innings. He's one of those pitchers that Dusty Baker just seems to kind of let him do go as long as he wants. He's a big guy. He's a workhorse. But Framber Valdez looked really good and was really efficient last night.
You have not seen many stretches for any of the starters outside of a couple in a row for Odorizzi and a couple in a row. I guess you could make the case for Luis Garcia, where these guys have just been completely, you know, out off their game. I guess Framber had a couple earlier this year. After his first start of the season, he had two starts. But for the most part, these starters have been pretty consistent thus far this year, and this is the kind of Framber Valdez that you are hoping for, because I think really the biggest key to how far the Astros go, we saw them obviously make it to the World Series last year, is if they are going to be able to have this kind of consistency from their starting pitching during the playoffs. And it wasn't an all-worldly performance by him. I mean, he did allow seven hits over the course of the game, but if you can go seven innings, great. You're just going to need to have good defense behind you. His ERA is down to 2.83. He has been pitching pretty well of late. I just want to know that this is something that we can rely on in the playoffs.
Be consistent, yeah, especially with Lance McCullers Jr. still out and no solid timetable on that. All right, meanwhile, the Texans starting OTAs, they're one of the teams in the league that has the better percentage of turnout at OTAs.
They should.
They definitely should.
I mean, who on that team can even...
Malik Collins and Laremy Tunsil. They are not there. They are not there.
Wait a second. Let's pause for a moment before continuing on to Texans OTAs.
What if I told you... Oh, okay.
Why is Laremy Tunsil still not there?
At Texans OTAs?
After not being there any of last year. Is something going on?
That's the topic of conversation for OTAs.
Yeah.
Is why our...
It is voluntary.
Yes. Yes, it is. But that leads into Texans OTAs.
Yeah.
Is why are they not there? Do they have the right not to be there? Lovie Smith had said yesterday that he wanted everybody there, but then I think quickly realized that is actually something you can't say as a coach, like
no,
literally
can't.
By NFL rules. So then he kind of wrapped it around by saying, it's like whoever's, it's not a big deal, whatever. But you can tell Lovie Smith wants his guys there.
It's
big deal
look.
Or no big deal?
I think it's a bad look for Laremy Tunsil specifically. I don't think it's a deal at all, but it's a bad look, if that makes sense. You know, it's not going to hurt the Texans at all going into this season. Laremy Tunsil is an offensive lineman who has experience in this league. If you're a young player, especially on the offensive lineman, you should be taking every single opportunity that you have to work with coaches so that you can get up to speed. And that's the good thing. You mentioned the turnout, Vanessa, for the Texans. It should be 100%. This team is not good. None of these guys should look at themselves in the mirror and think to themselves, I am safe if you are not one of the, you know, players that you're considering to be building blocks of the franchise. And if you are one of the building blocks of the franchise, you should be out there because it is your chance to build a leadership role. It is your chance to step up and perhaps cement your, you know, time with this team for maybe half a decade plus or something like that. So it's good to see the turnout. The Laremy Tunsil look continues to be just a what the hell.
Do we forget that his injury, like what even was his injury? Are we ever going to know what his injury was last year and why he didn't play?
And you know what, Vanessa, with the idea that he came back and that he did not force a trade out of this team this offseason, I was under the impression that things were perhaps rectified. And look, I'm speculating right now that maybe things are good behind the scenes and maybe they just told him, look, you don't need to be there. And again, it's voluntary. All I'm saying is if you want a guy to be committed to the team going forward, you want the guy to be there. Brandon Cooks is there. Where's Laramie Tunsil?
Where is Laramie Tunsil? Where the love at? Malik Collins not there as well. I don't buy this. Lovie Smith said he don't put too much into who's getting reps and who isn't. That was Lovie Smith on there being no first or second team right now. There's a first and second team.
There is.
These are the things that we hear from coaches at OTAs, though, because as Paul Gallant said, they are voluntary.
But I think you also have to, and you have to remember with OTAs, not a lot is being established. Like I've gone out to OTA practices before in the past, and I would like to believe that there is something to going out there and watching these guys practice. But I would say, as far as us, as far as, you know, people who have in the past reported on sports teams, the most that you're going to get out of it is you're going to get to know some of these players and really just get some face-to-face time so that they'll maybe trust you later on in the year. For the most part, as far as like actually being able to determine something, the people that keep track of how many incomplete passes are thrown over the course of a game, like, wow, insert quarterback X.
We won't at you, but they definitely exist in Houston sports media.
I'm just not even going to pay attention to them. I just think it's a wasted, futile gesture. It doesn't mean anything. It only means something if the guy is awful. That's it. And even if the guy is awful, it's not like, oh my God, this guy's going to be a bust or something like that, you know? But I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't be talking about things this way and just completely poo-pooing everything that happens in this industry as if I'm too cool for all of it.
Paul is way too cool.
I mean,
when we think of you, Sean, we think...
Excuse me.
Can you shoehorn a Florida high school football story into this?
You know,
to really submit that you're too cool for this?
Back when I played high school football in Florida, you know, all district safety. I forget where I was going.
Were you really in all district safety?
I was, but it was like,
oh my God,
really low district.
USF was looking at him, right?
Is your daughter single? If so, we got a former all district safety.
Listen.
All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant.
It's a small district.
If you own your home, listen up, grab your phone. Our friends at TGS Insurance Agency are about to deliver big savings to you and your all district safety, and you don't even have to talk to an agent. You know you're paying too much for your home insurance, but you don't shop for the better rates because it's such a hassle. Doesn't have to be, thanks to TGS. They have a new system. It shops 36 carriers and gives you that full quote in 15 seconds using nothing but a single text. You're probably going to save a bunch of cash. So all you have to do, take your phone out, text the word money, M-O-N-E-Y, to 232323. Their system will ask for your address. You send that back, and you get that full quote with great coverage within 15 seconds. This company is legit. The savings are real. The online rating is nearly perfect, and their average customer from 2021 is saving over $870. So again, you don't like to shop for home insurance, but TGS makes it the easiest it's ever been. You're only one text away from massive savings. One more time, text money to 232323. Get your home insurance quote and save big today.
This is ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
0061 on the text line says Paul's going to have to carry around a mop bucket now that these chicks know he was all district.
Oh, my God.
Sean,
oh
we have Hugh Hefner
God.
On our hands.
Listen, I'm proud of it, but I don't go bragging about it. Just
ask
me about it.
I actually think it's cool.
Thank you.
If you want me to be completely honest,
I was
say
good.
Hesitantly.
I was good in high school, but I was not good enough for college.
You were a good football player.
I wasn't good enough for college. I wasn't big enough. I mean, right now I weigh like 20 to 30 pounds more than I weighed in high school.
Oh, really?
So I was just like this little like idiot limpet who would just cling on to people and like roll and spear them and stuff in the head. Somehow I had a lot of tackles.
I can see you being the coach's like biggest headache at practice. Like getting really distracted easily.
You know what's funny?
But then being really energetic in games and being like the Energizer Bunny.
I did whatever they told me. I didn't say a word.
Really?
I was very obedient.
Do you believe that, Sean?
I would have had you as the Tim Riggins type.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
Friday Night Live.
I did whatever they told me. There were moments where I would be a little bit over the top boisterous and like goofing off. But it would be like in the middle of plays and just going, woo! And like making weird noises.
There it is.
That's it.
So, do you think you can help Jalen Petrie in his transition? Do you think as
he
a
should
safety,
reach out to me? Definitely.
Yeah. Do you think it's part of your job to help mentor Jalen Petrie?
Honestly, I do.
you know, come on, give me a phone call.
See, better than Ryan Tannehill, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, that's right. Although Ryan Tannehill, listen, he is disappointed with the way that that was taken.
Oh, what a bummer.
Well, I didn't think it was going to be taken,
although
dude.
Paul was not quite good enough, almost, but not quite good enough to go to the NFL. There were some NFL owners meetings in Atlanta.
Nice transition. Thank you for saving
Thank
me.
You. Little TV tease there. TV little transition there. NFL owners meetings did happen in Atlanta. We never expect much from Roger Goodell, but there were a lot of things on the agenda, from the Pro Bowl to some diversity initiatives, which got a lot of attention. The quarterback coach position, by the way, guys, now part of the Rooney Rule, which means that it can be incentivized if you have a minority coach and whatnot. The move for the Rams with Stan Kroenke, international marketing areas, not that the NFL needs more marketing. So there was a lot that was addressed. I do want to start with the Pro Bowl because that is a topic of conversation.
Kill it with fire.
Every year. For as much attention as the NFL gets, the Combine is a huge story. Free agency. We talked ad nauseum about the schedule release. We talk about the draftees and potential draft players for a month and a half leading up in a way that no other league does. So the Pro Bowl, by TV rating standards, still does quote-unquote well.
It really does.
Because it's the NFL.
It really does. And I want to know, I've always wondered this, Vanessa, what is wrong with these people who watch it? What is wrong with
To tell you the truth, do you want my theory on it?
Yes.
People have it on in the background. I really don't think anybody sits and watches the Pro Bowl.
So many people.
I know.
It's not like there's something that leads into it.
I know, but it's just there. But the players 100% do not care about it.
Oh,
you've
they don't
heard
want to be there.
Multiple players say that it's not like it used to be in the days, but wasn't it in Hawaii?
It was in Hawaii.
And they would wear the lays, and it would be really fun. And it's just not like that anymore.
As a kid, I remembered some good games, and there was a modicum of the same violence that you would see in an actual NFL game. But there were certain things that were outlawed. But now, in an era where I think more and more athletes are like, what's the point of this? I'm getting paid a ton of money. Why do I have to do this? It's hard to incentivize playing a game that does not matter.
And a game that could hurt you.
Exactly.
It's why you see a lot of guys even say that they're not going to do certain drills during the NFL Combine. You're seeing a lot of guys college guys opt out of bowl games. That old school mindset of I'm going to play as many football games as possible and I'm a dog and football is life.
Right.
There's a lot of guys that are looking at things from a different vantage point, whether it's because of injuries or CTE. I almost said CBD. That's not accurate. CTE.
That would be an incentive.
Here are some of the suggestions
have
that
them play
are
on CBD.
Around. That would actually be.
You know, everyone's just baked out of their minds.
All the guys that, just absolutely coming in
high. Hey, man,
high.
What is this ball anyway, man?
These are some suggestions that have been thrown around.
I saw some funny ones, yeah.
You saw some really funny ones. My personal favorite, everyone plays quarterback at least once.
Hell yeah.
I mean, you just have these absolute monster linemen that have to play the quarterback position.
That would be pretty funny.
That'd be funny.
Have the linemen play skill positions, have the receivers and the defensive backs who never want to get physical play those positions. One suggestion, instead of the Pro Bowl, have the two worst teams play each other for the number one draft pick. That would be great, but you would still have to somehow incentivize those players to play in that game, I guess.
Yeah, because if you're like a guy that's on a one-year deal or you're about to retire, what the hell do you care if your franchise has a number one pick?
Exactly, yeah. But for some, maybe you're like, well, this is my opportunity to shine or something like this in the toilet bowl. Another one, strip the rule book of pre-snap formation penalties so players can make and call their own plays, encourage schoolyard foolery, backward laterals, bonus yards, and then going to the thing you had said, everyone plays quarterback at least once. You know, Goodell saying the Pro Bowl doesn't work, he's not correct. It does work. People watch it. It's terrible. It's an awful product. I haven't watched a second of it in a decade, but it does work because for whatever reason, people watch it. So I don't know. I mean, I don't think they have to find a solution. I think that this is more grandstanding and saying, like, yeah, this isn't acceptable just to, I don't know, get people to stop talking about how terrible it is.
Meanwhile, Roger Goodell, deny the owners and the NFL not happy about a lot of things that went down with Stan Kroenke's move from St. Louis to moving the Rams to Los Angeles. Do you believe anything that Roger Goodell says about this.
I don't believe anything he says about anything.
Like anything in general.
But specifically this. They totally railroaded St. Louis. I understand why. What owner would rather be in St. Louis than Los Angeles? I also take a look at the stadium that the Rams were playing in, and much like when the Oilers were playing in the Astrodome, there wasn't an alternative, and nobody was willing to foot the bill on an alternative. But at the same time, they were not operating in good faith. The Kroenke, the owner of the Rams, was making it seem like he was trying to do something, negotiate with the city for potentially a new stadium in town. But as soon as they knew that the Los Angeles market was open, they did things that clearly indicates that this was their plan all along. I mean, why else would you buy a ton of real estate in the greater Los Angeles area if you're Stan Kroenke? And then, oh, wow, a stadium just appears
on
it.
Oh, wow.
You know?
How convenient. One of the reporters asked Roger Goodell, which is a great question, what assurances can you give fans in other cities that they'll hear the straight story from the league when it comes to their teams? And Roger Goodell basically said, I don't agree with your assumption that we weren't clear. Everything was very public. The processes were public. Not true at all. When you have NFL owners and people high up in the league that say that they were in the dark about some of these things, I think that that's a problem. And certainly when you look at the Pegulas in Buffalo using possibly a move to Austin to negotiate for a new stadium and take taxpayer money. Love the NFL. It is very shameless, and I think it's a huge problem.
Nothing can be done about it, though. Again, sort of like what we were talking about at the beginning of the show. Like, this is just
money,
the way that it is.
Mo problems.
That's just the way it is.
Oh, well. We went two different directions there with music.
This is Don Henley. Hang on a second. There's the... Wait.
Bruce Hornsby.
Bruce Hornsby in The Range. Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Nobody knows Divorced Dad music like me.
Is that Divorced Dad music?
It's Divorced Dad's
Why?
Music. Don Henley, Bruce Springsteen, Rick Springfield.
Well, Don Henley, because Don Henley post-Eagles was essentially the musician equivalent of a Divorced Dad. Dirty Laundry!
When he hits that falsetto, though, in one of these nights for the Eagles. Ooh-hoo!
That's
about a mop bucket.
That's him.
Yeah.
Mop bucket. Ew. He just has no. Really?
Coming up, his voice coming up on. if you missed the mop bucket reference, wow. Fogelot was talking about being an all distance.
Yeah, just shift the conversation back to me. That'll distract from what you just said.
Texted our show and said the ladies are going to be mop buckets now that they know Paul Gallant was an all district.
Clean up on the aisle.
Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we hear from Brandon Cooks, who did participate in the Texans OTAs. Plus, CBS asks a very interesting question online about Texans quarterback Davis Mills. That's next.
ESPN 97.5.